Warhead: How the Brain Shapes War and War Shapes the Brain. Written and read by Nicholas Wright. Dedicated to my great uncle, Sydney Spires, my wife, Marcia, and my children, Cece and Hugo. During World War II, Sydney survived years of fighting against Nazi Germany and its allies in North Africa and Italy, receiving the Military Cross for bravery in combat. In the photograph in the accompanying PDF, Sydney was at his 100th birthday party in 2016 in Brighton with Marcia and Hugo. Hugo had a tiny brain then, but brains grow, and Hugo's generation might know a little more about itself than Sydney's, or Marcia's and mine, and that makes me optimistic. Preface. Outside, it was a dark, chilly evening in late 2021. I sat in a warm, comfortable pub in North London with two friends I'd first met while we researched the brain together at the Institute of Neurology in London's Queen Square. We hadn't seen each other for a few months. After a couple of beers, one of my friends, a psychiatric doctor, turned to me and asked what I was working on. I told him I was writing a book on war and the brain. Rick laughed out loud. Nobody's going to go to war, not a big one anyway. I mentioned Ukraine or Taiwan as potential flashpoints. Why on earth, Rick replied, would the Russians or Chinese bother going to war over either of them? I replied that they might, and they might win too. Not everyone, I told him, sees the world as we do. Rick looked sceptical. Anyway, America has so many high-end ships, planes, missiles, and everything else that actually losing seems very unlikely. And it's irrelevant because there just won't be a war over Ukraine or Taiwan. So it doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. 3 months later, Russia launched a large-scale invasion of Ukraine, the biggest war in Europe since World War II's end. Tanks, planes, infantry, and artillery, backed by enough nuclear weapons to destroy the world many times over. Tens of thousands died on both sides. Even moderate, restrained analysts no longer view it as unlikely that Taiwan or something else could lead to war between China and the United States. And China might win. That evening over beers with my psychiatrist friend, I knew that 18 successive war games about Taiwan by US military planners had shown American forces losing. Wars happen. Individuals get into conflict. So do groups and entire nations. And today the stakes are higher than in Afghanistan or Iraq, which had smaller populations than the leading democracies and obsolete technology. For the first time since the Cold War, democracies must compete without huge material superiority. What are we supposed to do with this realization? Recoil? Say war is bad and disarm ourselves? Disarm the people who feel threatened in countries bordering aggressive authoritarians? Or build ever more powerful militaries and go around thumping anyone who looks suspicious? Neither extreme option worked out well in the past. We must respond more wisely, and to do that, we need to better understand why and how humans fight. What happens inside our heads, whether we are frontline soldiers, civilians, or leaders like China's President Xi Jinping? The reason I, a neuroscientist, have worked with the Pentagon Joint Staff for years is because they know that the human brain is pivotal to conflict, and they want to understand the remarkable new discoveries about the brain. The Pentagon understands something that my neuroscientist friends in London, New York, and Beijing never see. Human brains weren't built only for comfortable lives. I believe both perspectives can learn from each other. The latest cognitive neuroscience gives us better self-knowledge to answer the question: why do humans fight, lose, and win wars? I hope you come to believe, as I do, that the human capacity to think about the world outside us and to think about our own thinking can save civilization. Because self-knowledge is power. Introduction.